Welcome to Theology Thursday, an ecumenical space for students to discuss matters of faith and theology.
I'm your host, Connor Grubbs.
I am your co-host, Ryan Mock.
And I'm your co-co-host, Johnny Grubbs.
What are you laughing
at? Why are you giggling?
You whispered.
Why was that funny?
I don't know, I'm sorry.
Okay. Off to a great start here, folks.
I'm glad you're having fun. Hey, I want to thank our esteemed Patreons for supporting us. Because of your support, pretty soon we'll be able to get mic stands, which, as you can tell by looking at these three vastly different mic stands that
I got a little duct tape on mine.
We need mic stands, so we appreciate you. That's going to be our first step for this $1,000 setup for our new studio. If we hit that campaign, we need some more Patreons, because if we hit that campaign, we have a special surprise for all of you Patreons. It's $1,000 for us to have a new studio set up. It's going to be a blast. So we have the after show and the monthly podcast, the Theology Thursday reading after show.
And the $1,000, just to clarify for our listeners, that is...
We want $1,000 up front.
Okay.
No.
It's over time, right?
It's
like
over
time.
So
if you're a monthly giver, you're contributing to the $1,000 and it's piling up until we tell you, hey, thank you, your $15 a month just added up to $1,000.
So whatever tier you are, 5, 10, 15, everybody who gives until we get to that first 1,000 is a part of this group.
So the more people we have, the faster we'll meet that goal.
And the more people get to be a part of the party. So,
yeet.
It's good times all around. Good times all around. So, we're going to start with a subpoint, and we've been doing one subpoint instead of three, because a lot of people are like, we want to get right into the topic. We want to get into the meat of it. So, which is totally understandable, you know. So this week's subpoint is an album that came out recently, and it actually was the top streamed Christian album.
Ooh, I heard about this.
And it's kind of interesting that it was under the Christian album category, but the artist was very adamant that it be under the Christian album category. So this was an artist called Selmer. I don't exactly know. I think it's her last name. And the album is called Preacher's Kid. I actually listened to it the other day. And basically, it's about a queer person's story of growing up a pastor's kid and growing up in the church. And she insisted that it be released. It's this indie album that she made all on her own musically. I like it because I like that kind of stuff. Lyrically, it was interesting to hear her take her perspective, but she is openly lesbian, and she has no apologies to make for that. So she is celebrating that part of her life while also talking about how she's kind of wrestled with her faith. She still considers herself a Christian, and so she's talked about how she kind of deconstructed her faith after coming out and ultimately still believes in Jesus and reads her Bible and does all this stuff. So there's a lot to wrestle with there, and I think one of the reasons that it's worth talking about is because a lot of people are listening to this. I mean, it did very well. It's still one of the top albums in general, and it's making records in the Christian charts. So you're seeing it right next to Hillsong and John Foreman and these other people, which is surprising to me for a few reasons. Because of kind of the edgy nature of some of the songs, there is language on the album, some strong language on the album. So it's just... obviously it's openly supportive of the LGBTQ agenda. And I think for new believers, or for people who are just kind of searching and like listening to Christian music, seeing this under the same category might be a little confusing. But that was obviously, I mean, her goal was to get it out to those kinds of people. She wants people like us who grew up in the church and who have a traditional view of marriage to hear this album. Mm-hmm. Honestly, she's a good songwriter, all of that stuff, but obviously I don't agree with the view that it's okay to live that lifestyle. One of the songs I appreciated the most on, I forget the name of the song, but there's one song where she's basically writing an apology, not that she's responsible for it, but I just thought some of the lyrics were funny, to all of the teenagers who had their sexual awakening at a youth group lock-in. and what a weird idea youth group lock-ins are, which honestly I kind of agree with, like just packing a bunch of hormonal teenagers into a room for 24 hours and seeing what happens. Like, she's just talking about how weird that is.
Yeah, we got away from lock-ins around here.
We did two last year.
Yeah, as somebody in youth ministry though, who's done several lock-ins, I actually thought that song was hilarious.
We're evolving. No, that's awesome. That's interesting. I mean, it's hard. I mean, because, like, I always want to have an intellectually honest conversation about these things. You know, if she considers herself a Christian, I mean, she certainly may be a misguided Christian. Like, she may not understand fully, you know, the biblical aspects or whatever. But it is complicated, right? Because you don't want somebody just to come out of the blue and insert a counter narrative to maybe the traditional Christian sexual ethic. And then, like, that I don't know that that's the place to put that is in, like,
in music,
pop Christian music. You know what I mean? Like she insisted that it go on the genre so that it ends up on CCLI. I mean, is it on CCLI?
No, it's not on CCLI. Okay. But it is, like, on iTunes and Spotify and stuff like that. It's under Christian, you know, that genre. So it's right there with worship and Christian pop and all this stuff. But by the way, there's lots of here's one of the things I'd argue. I don't agree with it, but let's be honest. Her album is a lot more authentic than most of the Christian pop albums out there. I mean, just very cheesy, watered-down lyrics that aren't very theologically in-depth. That are just kind of a product, really. So
I suppose maybe it's my bias then. I mean, like, obviously, in some ways, it is a Christian record, right? I mean, she considers herself a Christian. She may be a Christian. She's dealing with Christian things. She cares about Jesus. She cares about people, right? But I still can't help but, and it could just be my baggage, but it could also just be true. I can't help but think that there may have been a subversive, you know, an ulterior motive in making sure that it ends up on that chart.
It definitely feels very in your face.
Right.
You know?
And it's like, to me, it's kind of like, well, the whole point of a lot of people's, what they're calling their deconstruction is, we were kind of led to believe, almost in a semi-emotional way, a certain way, and now we're trying to unpack that, right? And then you create an album that kind of conditions people, reconditions people. I don't know that reconditioning is the answer to cultural Christianity, you know what I mean? So, it's kind of the same thing all over again, but just from your perspective.
There's some concerns about where it's ended up, but then I think it brings up a deeper issue of, should we be getting our worldview perspectives from Christian music?
Anyway, no. Right.
We shouldn't in the first place. So, but that's why it's a concern to me, because a lot of people do.
Right.
They are listening to Christian music more than they are reading their Bibles, more than they are listening to a pastor preach the Bible. More than they're studying the Bibles, even more importantly. So that we have to put our own personal time studying and digging deeper into Scripture first. That has to be where our worldview and kind of our framework comes from, not from songs. You know, I mean, I'm a worship pastor. I love worship music. I think there's a lot of good modern worship songs. I also think there's a lot of garbage ones. But I don't have a problem with that. It's just the fact that a lot of, especially nominal Christians, that's kind of where their faith is formed. That's a problem.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know what my sub point next week is going to be. We're going to talk all about this whole LA idea of deconstruction that's come out, kind of originated in California. It's now swept across the nation. And I'm not sure I like the definitions of deconstruction and how that's all.
That sounds like a whole episode, Johnny.
Maybe it is. I don't know. I could just allude to it.
Besides, I'm pretty sure.
Do you
want to
talk about that on the after show?
No, it was actually mine this week.
You want to talk about that on the after show?
Oh, yeah. Let's talk about deconstruction on the after show.
We're going to talk about deconstruction on the
after show. I was thinking a lot about this last night.
A follow up to this sub point. So if you're not a Patreon, even tier one, $5 a month, you get the after show. Everybody gets the after show if they're a Patreon.
And deconstruction is the hot topic right now. So
we've also talked about tattoos, ASMR, transphobia. Look, it gets weird on the after show. That's where
you're
weird and
wild, but that's when we have the best conversations.
That's why you give us your money. Hey, I don't have the questions right in front of me, but I texted them to you guys, and all of my devices are being used to record this episode. All right.
I can read the original question. So it's funny just, that just I have the first answers. Question. Let's start with the first question.
These questions come from Raymond. I appreciate his questions. One of them is a very old question. One of them is a very recent one, and I figured we could actually kind of tackle both of them on the same episode.
Yeah. Yeah. The second one, I think it is pretty, won't take a lot of time. This is where we can spend most of our time is with number one. It says, why did God put the tree of the knowledge of good and evil in the garden when he knew Adam and Eve would sin? The age old question.
Yeah. And it's a fair question. I think a lot of people at some point ask that question as they're kind of putting together the biblical narrative is like, okay, God is sovereign and God is all knowing. And he gave them free will and put them in the garden with, with this with this tree and the ability. To make this decision. Why would he do that?
And don't forget, it's a misnomer apparently that Calvinists don't believe in free will.
We do. Yes, we do believe in free will, but that's a discussion for a different time.
Okay, so you're in agreement that God gave Adam and Eve a choice whether or not to eat from that tree.
Yes. They had the ability to choose to sin or to choose to not to sin. That's a whole philosophical discussion for a different time, though.
But ultimately, we agree on that statement as it stands. Maybe the nuances of that statement
are discussed. There's lots of nuance there.
Oh, there's tons of nuance. There's tons of nuance about this question.
Yeah. I think actually, my answer probably is different. It might be different.
I think it is different because we alluded to this question at some point. I had said kind of my like three word or one sentence take on it, and you're like, I want to hear more about that. I don't know about that. So I'm ready whenever, whoever wants to go first.
I don't want to go first.
I'm pretty excited about it. Do you want to share your bit? Or?
I want you to go first.
Yay. Okay.
I'm here to see you guys fight each other.
Yeah, I don't think we're going
to
fight
each other. That's what the audience wants to watch, too.
I think maybe we're just going to come at it from different, you know, it's kind of like if you're like.
Just go ahead and share your view.
You ever seen the movie Vantage Point? Never mind. All right. So here's the thing. The tree. It has kind of a multifaceted purpose. I must say that first. Mm-hmm. Okay. Adam and Eve are called in the beginning, right, to rule the world when it basically, I mean, it's you're supposed to have dominion. Basically, God was preparing Adam and Eve to take care of, to tend to the world, to really do all the things that we've done just in a worse way, you know, build cultures, build communities, you know, cultivate the earth, right? So he calls these to rule the world. Ironically, one of the Hebrew words used, he kind of refers to them as children. And I'm really butchering this and like going through it fast. We could get more in depth and like the actual Hebrew words and stuff like that. But he basically, the Hebrew word in Genesis kind of denotes that they're learners, they're children, they're under the direction of Yahweh, you know? And so God walks with them. This is clear later on when, like, he's coming through the garden, you know, during a certain time of the day, you know. So he's with them on a regular basis. That's also implied in the text. And so the connotation, when you look at it, especially if you start to, you know, pull out your lexicon and start to parse some of the original language, the Hebrew connotation is that God is going to teach them good and bad, right and wrong, as they take on the mantle of ruling, mm-hmm. right? This is
something that God would teach them through this.
Right, exactly. God mm-hmm. would over time teach them right and wrong, good and bad. This is heavily implied in the text, and so that they can rule. And so the question becomes, well, then why the tree, right? God's showing them good and evil. The tree is a challenge. Are you going to take wisdom from me, the source, God, Yahweh, are you going to learn from me? Are you going to try to seize wisdom for yourself? And so that's really how, through reading different scholarship and stuff like that, how I've come to understand the tree, you know, that it was really a challenge. Are you going to seize wisdom for yourself? Are you going to allow God to teach you in time what it truly is? It was really a question.
Yeah.
Do you trust me? Do you love me?
And so far, up to this point, I'm in perfect agreement with everything that you've said.
Okay. All right. Interesting. the question for me becomes, but if God foresaw that they would be deceived, right, then why the tree? You know, if God foresaw that, why the tree? And my answer, looking at the unified story that leads to Jesus, is love. The tree was placed in the garden because of love. If you look at the narrative, right, considering good and evil on your own, it's actually morally innocuous. Like considering it, trying to weigh what is good and what is evil, that was within their earthly rights. Look at the text. Eve considers the idea that the tree is desirable, right? She still hasn't sinned yet. She just looks at it and says, that's a shortcut. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, so she's considering, maybe, is it wiser for me to seize wisdom a little bit quicker? Jump the gun? But she doesn't sin until she makes the statement by taking from the tree, which is why a tangible thing was necessary, a device for tangible obedience and trust, which ultimately is love in action, right, is necessary for love. We know this to be true, right? There's a tangible, we make covenants of love, we make standards around love, even in relationships, you know, it's like, there's this idea of like cheating on another person and stuff like that. We create tangible ways of showing our submission, our obedience to one another in order to communicate love. Now, of course, culture has taken that. There's polyamorous situations and stuff like that. But even in those situations, there are usually boundaries, right? Mm-hmm. There are usually tangible things that you can do or not do, which communicate that you are in a love relationship. And so the tree was a necessary device. My question, after kind of seeing all of that come together in the narrative, isn't why did God put it in there, you know, but why did God go through with it? Because he knew the tree was necessary for love, but he knew they would fail to love him. Right. So he knows that this is necessary in order to create this environment where he can have a love relationship with this creation. But he also knew what it would cost him. And he did it anyway. Mm-hmm. You know, so the tree of knowledge of good and evil, which we often relate to, you know, and rightly so. You said it's a fair question. We often relate it to, well, was that really the wisest thing? Ironically, the same thing that Adam and Eve were doing, right, with the tree. Is that really the wisest thing? It's actually one of God's greatest expressions of love. Because in his omnipotence, that a love relationship with his creation, even though he knew that, he basically stated it was worth the consequences of our failure.
Yeah.
You know, to do that.
I just think it's interesting how in that too, this is kind of a separate thing, but I'm just noting how the tree really and their decision with it really reflects the essence of sin in the first place, is that sin almost always boils down to us wanting to take control, us wanting to have authority.
Mm-hmm.
And oftentimes sin comes from a God-given desire being perverted.
Right.
Into our own timing and our own way of doing it.
And if you really think about the whole narrative, it's really, really good. Like, there's so much packed in that in that narrative. But when you think about it, like, even as believers, right? Paul, very explicit with the fact that we're going to still struggle with sin as believers, right? When do we struggle with sin the most? It's when we neglect our relationship with the Lord. They were given this opportunity. Did God really say? They could have clarified with God. He was coming to walk through the garden a little bit later, right? I mean, they could have waited and invested in their relationship with Yahweh and said, God, I'm considering this. What do you think is wise? They could have asked him what his standard was. And oftentimes, our biggest mistake is not pausing to consider what God would have us do in a situation of temptation. But I just think it's ironic that now we're kind of faced with the same question, right? We're reeling with the fallout of the consequences of them eating the tree. And God is calling us back to a place where we trust him, you know, that his plan is good, that his plan is wise, that the tree of knowledge of good and evil is wise. It's the same choice all over again when we have some of these questions. They're totally fair. But at the end of the day, I think that the tree of knowledge of good and evil was, that's why love exists, you know, so.
Ryan.
So, I think I agree mostly with everything you've said. The way I answered the question, I answered the question from a different angle, I think. So I do have a different answer than you. But when I thought about this, I have found this question comes up with a lot of people as like a philosophical question, you know, why did God do this or whatnot? I find that I am very unsatisfied with a lot of the answers that people give. And the biggest answer that I hear in response to this question is God did this. God put the tree of the knowledge of good and evil in the garden so that we can have free will to choose good and evil. And the reason why God would do that is so that we wouldn't be robots. I don't like that answer. I do affirm free will. As a Calvinist, even as a Calvin, Calvinists do affirm free will to a certain sense. And even at the garden, we did have the freest will, you know, to choose evil or to choose good. But I don't think that was the purpose behind the tree. And maybe Johnny does disagree with me there. And the way I think about it, you know, is in heaven, do we lose free will? Are we robots in heaven? When we go to heaven, we will not be able to sin. It will not be a part of our nature. But does that make us robots? I don't think so. I think we are allowed to express love. I think that's what we're going to be doing all the time in heaven, is expressing our love to God in heaven, even though we're not even able to sin in heaven. But that doesn't take our free will away, and that does not take our autonomy away. So I don't find that answer satisfying. And maybe my answer is even more simple than what Johnny said. Ultimately, why did God, knowing that Adam and Eve were going to eat from the tree, why did God not intervene? And ultimately, I have to affirm, and this is from a Reformed perspective, mind you, that God did not intervene because God actually had this all planned out from the beginning. That this was actually all part of God's plan. That answer is scary to a lot of people, and I can understand why, because it makes it sound like God ordained evil. And, well, I believe in a sovereign God, and I have to affirm that. And I think we see that pattern in Scripture as well. We think about the big example that people would give is the story of Joseph. What happens to Joseph in Genesis? He's sold into slavery by his brothers. They really don't like him. They're jealous of him, and so they sold him. They beat him up. They threw him in a hole, and then they sold him into slavery. And Joseph goes through all of this crap on his journey, and he ends up in prison. And it's a whole story. You should read it. It's a great story. But ultimately, through these events, Joseph he ascends to the second highest office in Egypt through these events. And finally, Joseph, he actually reconciles with his brothers through a series of events. And he says this in Genesis 50. He says to his brothers, "As for you, you meant evil against me, but God meant it for good, to bring it about that many people should be kept alive as they are today." So Joseph's brothers sold Joseph into slavery. But here, Joseph recognizes that it was God's plan all along. So who caused Joseph to be sold into slavery? Was it Joseph or was it God? The answer is both. What we see in Scripture is that God uses secondary agents to do his will. Another example I would give is in 2 Samuel chapter 24. My pastor recently preached on this text. David, King David, he's king of at the time, and he decides to take a census. And this was actually a sin for David to do, to take a census. And that's really weird for us to hear. Why is it wrong for David to count his army? And so scholars have talked about that, and many scholars have come to the conclusion that it was sinful for David to take a census of his army because of David's intention. He was probably taking a census so that he could go forth with imperial unjust war against neighboring kingdoms, which would not have been good. And so that was kind of the heart behind David's actions there in taken the census. But verse 1 of chapter 24 in 2 Samuel says this: "Again, the anger of the Lord was kindled against Israel, and he incited David against them, saying, "Go number Israel and Judah." That's a wild verse right there. That verse tells us that God incited David to take the census. Something that God didn't want David to do, that God deemed sinful for David. We read in another passage, though, in a different book, the same story. 1 Chronicles chapter 21, verses 1 through 2. It reads this: "Then Satan stood against Israel and incited David to number Israel. So David said to Joab and the commanders of the army, 'Go number Israel from Beersheba to Dan and bring me a report that I may know their number.'" So in 1 Chronicles, it tells us that actually it was Satan that incited David to take this census. And what's the conclusion that we make there is, who was it? Was it God or David? Or was it God or Satan? And the answer, it was both. God actually uses Satan for the purposes of his will. And another story, we can look at Job, whatever, you know. The reality is that God has ordained everything. I affirm God's sovereignty. Why would God ordain these things? And ultimately, it is because it is for his glory, I have to say. Through the sum of Scripture, from Genesis to Revelation, everything that God does is for his glory. And that includes the death of Jesus on the cross. And that whole plan of redemption, it is about love. And God expressing his love for his people also magnifies his glory. All of it's for his glory. And so I do agree with Johnny that in the garden, we do see this. I think love is definitely a part of it. But I think in like the big picture, I think it's about God's glory. Maybe you agree with me or disagree with me.
I do agree with you. I mean, I think that was kind of my point. Is like I certainly don't believe that first theory. That is a common answer, right? Yeah. That the tree of knowledge of good and evil was placed there so that we would not be robots. They already weren't robots. He was already considering and weighing good against evil. Yeah, as she was being trained by God to do so, right? Okay, so she had free will already. It was a device for tangible obedience, which created the possibility of love. And I think I've been asked that question before by students. It's like, okay, well, now sin will one day be completely removed. Okay, that possibility is now removed. Does that mean that we are robots? That we've lost our free will? Well, there's a big difference at that point. When we enter into the new kingdom, when God finishes the work that he's doing in us, Habakkuk has a prophecy that the earth will be filled with the knowledge of the glory of God. Interesting, like you're talking about the glory of God, as the waters cover the sea, that there won't be any absence of understanding good and evil and weighing God. Like, we will know God's wisdom. It will be been revealed to us in fullness. And so we won't have anything, we won't need to weigh any options. We will know what's true and what's right. Of our own accord, because we've chosen through faith, but there just won't be any room for it anymore, because the knowledge of the glory of God will cover as the waters cover the sea. And so that's the main difference, not necessarily that we don't have free will, but that there's no room to push that free will into evil anymore. Mm-hmm. And but yeah, I totally agree that that was not the main purpose of the tree, was to give us free will. God made us with free will. Mm-hmm. Totally different conversation, really, about like David and stuff like that. It's that whole foreknowledge versus actual, ordination, which honestly, I think that's just nuance. I don't think we fully comprehend what those things mean anyway.
Yeah,
right?
that would be a whole different
podcast. It would be. I mean, because but like
my point in talking, bringing those verses up is that God, I think God does ordain evil. However, the mechanics of that works, that's open for debate. But I do think that God has a plan that he had from the foundation of the earth.
Mm-hmm. And I think ultimately I could assent to that in a different way. But like, just what does that really mean? I mean, like, because I really do think that God did all of this in foreknowledge, that he did all the calculations and he knew exactly how it was going to go down. And so in a way, you could say God ordained evil, right? So if he calculates this incredible domino chain reaction that ends in the glory of God as the waters cover the sea, he may not be tipping the 50th domino, but he tipped the first one, so he did ordain it,
yes,
but he's not responsible for it.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Right.
And so by no means do I affirm that God is responsible
right.
for evil, or that evil comes from God, that God is evil, because everything that God does is for good. Mm-hmm. I think the Bible makes that clear.
But if we really believe in God's sovereignty, then nobody would be able to commit acts of evil unless God sovereignly allowed that possibility. So... Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Apparently, love is worth it. You know, and I think that's why I come back to it. Yes. The existence of love. We would live in a loveless world. It's cheesy, but I remember I was sitting in the living room of my grandfather's house when he was alive in Naples, and he fell asleep, and Hallmark Channel was still on, and there was this old like Hallmark Hall of Fame movie called Valley of Light. And this dude was just—he was like living his life so that nobody could hurt him anymore and stuff like that. And she goes, "You might find some valley of light where you know everything's perfect, everything's fine, but I imagine it's a loveless place, right? Because he wasn't willing to let anybody in, and therefore he wouldn't have a relationship of love. And so, I guess love is worth it to people. And it's interesting that even in like a cultural thing that was completely—that
was very cheesy, John.
It is very cheesy, but even in that movie, there's this theme of you know what." I might get hurt. I might have to be vulnerable, but I want to experience love, right? That's the value of love, and God is love, right? So, so that to me is.
And I do want to restress that because I did talk a lot about God's glory, but the Bible does say God is love,
right?
And so, in whatever God does, expresses that love.
But part of His glory is His love, and I think like I want to glorify God when I read this that He foreknew. And or slash ordained like everything, right? That's going to happen, and he still said, "I'm going to have to go to the cross in order for this plan, for this to go to plan." Yeah. But I'm willing to do that.
Well, mm-hmm. and that's why I think your answers don't really contradict each other, because at the end of the day, God loving us and knowing all that would entail. He also knew that is the thing that would bring him the most glory. So
now, playing the devil's advocate just for a second, right? There are some more intellectual atheists who might say, well, I would rather just not exist than have to go through this and not experience the love of God. But I think that's a person that has not experienced the Holy Spirit and understood. Because once the Holy Spirit gets involved and you understand that existence is beautiful in the end, right? I mean, Revelation 21, then all of a sudden it is worth it, you know? But you know, that's where you get into ethics and all this kind of debate about, you know, whether or not, it would have been more ethical, human ethics, right, for God to just leave it be. But sure. I'm glad to be alive personally.
So honestly, I think we're actually going to have to wait till next week to answer the other question.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
We got a full episode here. So, it's good discussion. I mean, how long do you think that'll take?
I mean,
I don't want to rush it, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I only have a few thoughts.
I do too. I mean, where are we on time?
We're on like the 35-minute mark.
Oh, maybe we should wait.
Yeah, I think we should wait.
We'll wait. Maybe you could throw in another question for next week as well.
Yeah. All right, guys. Well, thank you so much for joining us this week on Theology Thursday. Raymond, thank you for your question. It's a great question. A lot of people have that question, and I think it's worth exploring. So, Ryan, go ahead.
Yeah, I eat.